This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. We're thrilled today to be visiting with Pam Guler, who's a Chief Experience Officer at AdventHealth, and Dr. Ulrich Simmons. And Dr. Simmons is both the Chief Health Equity Officer at AdventHealth. He's also the Chief Medical Officer of one of the core campuses of AdventHealth. We're going to talk to Dr. Simmons and Pam today about the vaccine rollout, some of the issues, some of the challenges, some of the ways that AdventHealth has attacked the problem and solved the problem, or working to solve the problem. And we're just thrilled to get a chance to visit with the both of you today. Dr. Simmons, can I ask you to take one moment to introduce yourself and ask Pam to do the same thing?
Absolutely. So first of all, thank you for having us today. I am a surgeon by training. I've been practicing here in the Orlando, Florida area since 2006. The practice largely based on acute care surgery, breast cancer, and thyroid surgery. I've been a chief medical officer for the last about 3.5 years, first at the AdventHealth East Orlando campus, and most recently at Celebration since August. And I'm very, very proud to be the inaugural chief health equity officer for all of AdventHealth enterprise-wide. And we're really on, a fantastic journey to really start to understand and tackle health inequities that we find in our system.
Thank you very much. And Pam, can I ask you to introduce yourself? And then after you introduce yourself, tell us about AdventHealth and give us a sense of the size, the footprint, the culture, and so forth.
Absolutely. And thank you for having us as well. I'm Pam Guler, Chief Experience Officer for AdventHealth. And in my role, I work with our leadership teams across AdventHealth, really focused on consumer and patient experience and working to ensure that we're delivering the very best experience possible for those that we serve. When it comes to COVID and the vaccine, and I know we'll be talking about that a little more, you know, I've been honored to serve as the consumer experience lead in all of our efforts around the COVID vaccine and COVID in general. So that has been just truly an honor to be on that journey. And to give you a little bit of perspective about AdventHealth, we're a faith-based system with 50 hospitals located across 9 states. Along with a care delivery network of physician practices, outpatient clinics, skilled nursing, home health, and hospice. We've got 80,000 team members who have just been amazing throughout the pandemic, and we have a strong culture bound by our mission of extending the healing ministry of Christ and a focus on whole person care. With our brand promise is to really help those that we serve to feel whole. So that's a little bit about AdventHealth.
Thank you. And I don't think everybody realizes that AdventHealth has grown into a $12+ billion system. It's one of the largest systems in the country and a great system. I want to ask you, Pam, I'm going to ask you to describe the vaccine task force, and then Dr. Simmons, I'm going to ask you to describe the scientific committee and sort of just talking about how you've managed the vaccine rollout and so forth. Pam, do you want to start with the COVID vaccine task force?
Absolutely, happy to. So at the beginning of the COVID pandemic, AdventHealth put in place a COVID system command type function to really help across our large system with consistent decision making and communication across the system. And that system command launched a specific vaccine task force last September, with the goal of that task force being to develop, execute on a strategy to achieve safe, effective, and equitable COVID vaccination for our team and for the consumers that we serve. And that multidisciplinary task force has worked really closely together since September, with groups focused on a variety of areas, from vaccine prioritization, supply chain, government partnerships, administration and tracking of vaccine, the consumer experience, marketing, and communications. And we've worked with our market leaders across our system as they worked with their states and counties to secure as much vaccine as possible since the FDA EUA approvals to get those vaccines in arms. And we've been supported by an amazing scientific committee as well of physicians along the way. And I'll pivot over to Dr. Simmons.
Well, thank you. So, you know, in much the same vein, once our command center was set up at the earliest portion of the COVID pandemic, we realized that the amount of information that we were learning from a global perspective, even as COVID was just reaching the shores of the United States, had the impact of allowing us to think about some treatment algorithms. And the Scientific Research Committee was then formed to do really just that. There had been some introductory work done by some great physicians at our hospitals, as well as some of our pharmacists. And the Scientific Review Committee then had really three functions that we wanted to do. One was to be able to interrogate the global literature that was available. Two was to rapidly take what we were learning from the events in Italy and Europe and the like as they were seeing COVID unfold. And three was to then have an approval mechanism that allowed each chief medical officer to look at the recommendations. And our chief medical officer makeup for our division is very heterogeneous. So we've got pediatric surgeons, we've got infectious disease doctors, we have emergency room physicians, we have anesthesiologists. And so we were able to gain a lot of insight both from the chief medical officer approval process, but also from the 26-member scientific review committee that I've had the privilege of chairing for the last year. And those docs comprise infectious disease, critical care medicine, epidemiology, and the like as well. And so we've been able to very rapidly take some of the learnings that others have had around the world and bring them into play to the positive effect of our patients.
And take a moment, Dr. Simmons, really two questions. I mean, the establishment of the scientific committee, a lot of states and health systems have done so, but there's still the question of necessity of it, given that you've got the FDA, the CDC, everybody else looking at these things. Just for a moment, why a scientific committee?
Well, the scientific committee is important, particularly when you have a scale of operation the size that we do. And so the decisions and the algorithms that we recommend are then implemented into power plans that are utilized in the electronic health record to make orders for patients and to directly affect their care. The CDC recommendations, the FDA recommendations give guidance, but in terms of actually making that into something that's operational to be used by our clinicians with a fair degree of ease is important for us to do. Similarly, both of the agencies that you mentioned, Scott, have changed many of their opinions on what medications should be used, on whether or not masking was right, on whether or not masks could be reused when we had a deficiency of PPE and didn't have N95 masks. And so the Scientific Review Committee literally has served the function of kind of the sorting the mail, if you will, as it applies to early in the pandemic, really a deluge of information that we received on all things from whether or not testing with antigen or PCR was correct, or the algorithm to test patients preoperatively for procedures and all of those type of things. So it's been a very, very robust committee. And again, I've been very, very privileged to chair.
No, when you put it in that context of, look, there's so much to sort through that we need it because we need to sort through all the different guidance coming out. I think it makes a ton of sense. I'm going to ask you one more question. I'll turn it back to Pam.
Sure.
The question that Anthem Health performed a large consumer study around vaccines, particularly around vaccine hesitancy. Tell us a little bit about what you found in that study, or what the committee found in that study.
That should be a question that Pam can tee up, because her team has really been on the front edge of that research. So I'll let my colleague answer that one.
Super. I'm happy to. All right. So, you know, really early on, we identified the need to have a deeper understanding of how our consumers and our communities were feeling about the vaccine. And to help us learn more, since October, we've actually used our patient experience survey platform to ask our consumers about their likelihood to get the vaccine once available to them, as well as what could Advent Health do that would help make them more comfortable with getting vaccinated. We continue, Scott, to ask these questions to this day on our patient survey platform. And over time, since October when we started, we've heard from well over 160,000 consumers. So it's a very rich study. And we've really taken a look at the feedback in this study in a number of ways, especially looking at the stratifying the study by gender, age, and race of those respondents to get additional insights in what people are thinking and how we can help address. And we've seen clear differences in vaccine hesitancy with women, especially of childbearing age, being more hesitant than men. When we look at race, we see our Black and Hispanic respondents have been much more hesitant than white respondents. I mean, the good news is that as time has gone by, this hesitancy is diminishing, but there is still a gap. I'll give you a couple of examples. We've seen in our Black respondents, we've seen them move from a 27% positive about the vaccine back in October to over 55% positive in February. And at the same time, we've seen our white respondents move from October at 50% positive to almost 75% positive in February. So everyone's going up. There's still a gap that needs to be addressed. And of course, there's a gap in access as well. And I'll share a bit more. We studied tens of thousands of consumer responses about what we could do to help them be more comfortable with getting the vaccine. And through a lot of sentiment analysis, we have watched over time, this has been consistent. Top three themes we heard in these verbatims from our consumers was that they are concerned about side effects and also just general trust in the process to develop the vaccines. They want to have more facts and they want to know the science. And this has helped to inform how we're messaging to our consumers. And as a result of all these insights and the national research, everything we're hearing, our vaccine task force chartered a vaccine. This is a long word, but long term, but vaccine hesitancy for underserved communities and women work group. And Dr. Simmons and I have served together on this group with a group of passionate individuals. And, you know, our focus is on shots in arms access for the underserved and outreach to really influence hesitancy, turn that to readiness for both the underserved and women. In our couple of examples in our underserved communities, our leaders across our system are leveraging, if they don't already are not already very well aware of their underserved communities, and most are, but they also have at their fingertips disparity data reports with a social vulnerability index that looks at 15 different social factors from poverty to lack of vehicle access to crowded housing. And this type of informative data is helping us to really pinpoint what communities we reach out to. And we've provided our leaders with a really robust toolkit around vaccine hesitancy with resources varying from FAQs about the vaccine, print, digital, video, collateral, sharing the facts, addressing concerns, debunking some of the myths about the vaccine. And, you know, we've had team members asking us as well. This is pretty exciting about how they can help spread the word. And we're in the process of launching a grassroots campaign across our own 80,000 team members to get your shot, encourage their shot, and spark conversations in the community. And so much more outreach is underway. And I believe, Dr. Simmons, you're going to share more around that.
Sure, happy to. Yeah, you know, I think that the challenge with this has been, despite all those efforts, you know, each individual acute care hospital was not necessarily in the allocation pathway for large amounts of vaccine to be given. And the timing of much of the work that Pam has just described for you was done intentionally and place at a time horizon such that we wanted to really win over minds and trust and hearts of patients so that, as she mentioned, the campaign, the slogan that we came up with was, get your shot, encourage their shot. So when the vaccine became ready, that they had already crossed this consciousness chasm to say, yeah, we're ready to receive this. We understand it. We've had time to process the science. We've had time to understand it, and now we're prepared to do so. And I think that the benefits of what she has said in terms of the numbers that are changing, in terms of the demographics who are willing to accept the shot, are the fruit of that labor.
Let me ask you a follow-up question in terms of that. First, I mean, it's a magnificent effort. And is it right now more, is hesitancy more the problem, or not enough shots the problem? And does that differ greatly by state and hospital by hospital, or area by area?
I think it's part of the schizotypia of the rollout plan, honestly, where federal government controls the dispensation, but states decide the right age, the right population. So, you know, we're in Florida, and initially, if you were 65 or older, you could get it. The mayor made one move and reduced that down to 40. The governor said, no, it was going to be 50. And then today, everybody's saying, you know, if you're younger than 40, you can get it. And so I think to some degree, it's both. There's heterogeneity of thought, there's heterogeneity of experience, and heterogeneity of trust. And so there's some folks who want it. I get frequent phone calls, text messages saying, hey, do you guys have vaccine? Can I get a shot? And sometimes we do, and sometimes we do not. We've been given aliquots of 2,000, 2,500 or so, but not consistent, tens of thousands, where we could do a process to enable all of the patients that we would want to get vaccinated. So I think to your question, there's a component of both, understanding, hesitancy, and availability.
And talk about, we've talked about outreach for vaccines, mass vaccination events, other ways to get shots in arms to people that otherwise might not work through the computer system or be up at 3 a.m. to try and get their shots. You know, or not get the public on time, or whatever it might be. Talk a bit about the mass vaccination events, the outreach vaccination events, plus how this plays into health equity and making sure serving the entire community, not just privileged parts of the community.
No, absolutely. So, you know, one of the, I think, more successful mass vaccinations that Advent Health has had here locally is at the Orlando International Airport. And that has been an operation that has had the capacity to do 2,000 vaccinations a day. We've also had other vaccinations for our medically vulnerable at the institutions itself, where we have vaccinated team members and the community as well. The outreach has continued in other locations outside of the state of Florida. So, for example, in our Hendersonville, North Carolina, we've worked with and partnered with the Greater New Zion Baptist Church, which is an African-American church, to vaccinate their team members. Also partnered with the Macedonia Missionary Baptist Church to vaccinate their congregants who are 65 years and older. And we've also partnered with the Council on Aging in Henderson County and the Interfaith Assistance Ministry there as well to vaccinate their volunteers. So, you know, each community is a little different. And we've tried to tailor outreaches to the extent that we have vaccine to do that. But, you know, the other thing that I think that we've done very, very skillfully is kind of a sports analogy, and that's move without the ball, right? So you make yourself open for the pass, if you will. So what we've done is made or attempted to make our patients or consumers prepared to receive the vaccine. The analogy would be to receive the ball.
Oh, fantastic. I'll ask you another question on a slightly different line. You've Harvard, Morehouse College, Ohio State. Are the people at Harvard approachable or arrogant? What's your impression?
My cohorts at Harvard have been phenomenal. I love them dearly. And I think the name tips people off more than anything, but I found them to be some of the most considerate and noble people that I've interacted with.
In PM, as Chief Experience Officer, you've done a remarkable job. How excited are you about this effort that Advent has put into this effort on vaccine hesitancy and trying to make sure you're getting shots in arms? Just give us a sense of your pride and excitement in what you're doing.
You know, this has been one of the I've been working in the field of patient experience for over 20 years now. I've been with Advent Health for 10 years, and this has been, to me, in my heart, some of the most meaningful work I've ever had the privilege to work on, working with individuals like Dr. Simmons and and our Chief Diversity Officer, Jessica Brazier, and others in this work that's having the ability to have such an impact on so many people is to me just the ultimate patient experience. And it's so exciting to work in this space.
I want to thank you, Pam Guler, Dr. Simmons, for joining us today on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I want to thank you for the remarkable work you're doing. It's really impressive to hear, and I love the thoughtfulness and the execution and effort that's going into it. Just magnificent. Thank you very much for joining the Becker's Healthcare Podcast today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. We appreciate it. Thank you.